career counseling, correct?
The issue of making decisions is in itself, you know, one of the most difficult decisions, and when and how to make the decision. And one often can get good advice from Rebbeim and sometimes from professionals in career counseling. But in the end, of course, the burden really, you never get away from the burden. That's one of the key aspects of Bechira, that all the critical decisions in your life, you know, you have to take a responsibility, even if you got an ace, in other words, you have to take a responsibility for the decision. Yes, the longer you stay in America, the harder it is to go. I think that's no question. Get rooted, and then when a fellow starts going out, right, he's going to have to make a cheshbon, and I've been asked this question by many fellows in Yeshiva, right? This one does occur. A fellow starts going out, and he wants to live in Israel. And so how much does that be a criterion before he'll go out with the girl, right? Does he check with someone and say, is she ready to live in Israel? And only if they agree on that will they go out. Or, you know, he'll take his chances. He'll go out with someone, tell him it's a wonderful girl, so we'll go out with her. And then we'll see, you know, it's hard to, you know, to pin this, to pin this thing kind of down. I want to balance what I said before, because I don't want to sound too harsh on it. Obviously there's a need for people who feel how critical it is to get every Jew, and particularly Bnei Torah, to come to Israel, to fight very hard. Because once someone's back in America, it is much easier to stay. First of all, because it's always much easier to stay than to go anywhere else. One's in a pattern, it's very easy to maintain that than to have to make a move with all the complications involved. Secondly, of course, in Gashmis, America is, in general, I mean, there may be one exception in the whole country, but in general, the standard of living and the comforts are much, much, much greater here. So that I understand very well the need to, while the Rebbeim and Achim have their shot and they get their chance, because after you're in America they won't get their chances, so, you know, sell their commitment and their case with full intensity. And I didn't mean to criticize them in any way. Just that I find that sometimes people come back with tremendous enthusiasm, convinced it's the only way, and that sometimes can even stand in their way of adjusting and handling certain situations and learning, because can't be done here, you know, only be done there itself. I had a long discussion with a fellow this summer who, after a couple of years in Eretz Yisrael, was now going to go to college in Israel, in a setting where he would not learn anywhere as much as he learned here in Yeshiva, acknowledging all the weaknesses here. And he admitted it. But he was so convinced that the minute he goes back to America, his love for Eretz Yisrael would dissipate. And there's no way he'll ever get back if he allows himself to come here for 1 year or 2 years to finish college. It's over for him. And therefore, he has to sacrifice and go to some kind of setting and program which has a limited amount of learning available to him, because otherwise he won't do it. And I honestly, I asked him, did your name in Israel say it that way? He said, depends which one. Some of them encouraged him in his thinking, and others actually said to him, no, listen, if your love for Israel is genuine, and your commitment is what you feel it is, then it should be survived. Continue your education in a setting in America. That's a setting where you can learn more as well. Obviously, I didn't convince him he's there. And I really can't tell you till a couple of years from now what are the consequences of his decision. You know, is he learning in this setting? Is he learning that much? How it is affecting him? Just started, so we'll know in a few years. But that's one person made a chesed in that direction. I have to assume from you all being in this room that all of you who have been in Israel made the decision. Those of you who plan on living in Israel, I'm not talking about those who don't plan on living in Israel. Those who plan on living in Israel obviously made the decision that they can learn and prepare themselves better coming back, assuming that you were not dragged by your parents over here. but you actually acquiesced to the decision, that you made a cheshbon, that your love for Eretz Yisrael can handle your being here while you prepare yourself in a manner which you feel is going to be more effective. Yes, sir. Okay.
As someone who's done career counseling, I want to say that many students have the situation where they come back from Eretz Yisrael, and they say you're pre-med, and the question of when do you decide can be very relevant, because you know if you're going to continue with pre-med, you just come back and decide you want to settle, you want to go all the way out to Eretz Yisrael. You know if you continue with pre-med, then probably you're not going to go to Eretz Yisrael, because you become a doctor, and what kind of doctor do you need to Eretz Yisrael? The question is, should you change your major at that point when you come back? And it's a very serious decision. It has all kinds of implications, especially into how strongly committed are you to pre-med. Is there something else which would give you equal or reasonably equal Sibuk, or at least sufficient Sibuk and Nefesh that you can feel that sense of fulfillment? The question that LeBlanc mentioned is very relevant, because it's something you have to consider. When you come back from Eretz Yisrael, you're all enthusiastic, so it cuts two ways. On the one hand, that's the time that if you really feel that you can go on Aliyah, then you might have to make certain decisions. On the other hand, it's possible that you're all excited, and the factor of learning, which Rabban mentioned, there may be, you have to really think how much you can have a firm yet to heart too. And believe me, I always talk about the beauty of the patient going to Israel, and the kinds of fellow of our students and alumni who sell in Israel. In my opinion, it's the cream of the graduate alumni of YU who are in Israel, because obviously there's tremendous idealism, but it can be a form of Yetzer Hara. The question is, are you meeting certain needs of your own, or are you really objectively, as objective as a person can be, are you really trying to understand who you are and what you can do, and not just because it's so wonderful to be in Eretz Yisrael, and it's so exciting, and it's so, and it meets some need of yours, which is a need, but not really who you are. So I just wanted to add that to you.
Yeah.
Should a person pass up on what might be a good business opportunity here, and once they're at the Shoah, maybe possibly work for X number of years in order to...
It's very hard to give a specific answer to that kind of a question. You have to tell me the nature of the fellow. What of a difference we're talking about in economics? Is he the kind of fellow who can maintain a dream 5 years down the line? And with some degree of assurance that he will stick to it. What will be the consequences if he turns down a great business opportunity and then goes to Israel right away, and then has a bad experience, and he's going to feel, you know, suddenly disillusioned and frustrated. I could have been something, and I gave it all up. It's very hard to predict how one's going to respond, you know, later on. And when anyone who is has the responsibility or the opportunity of giving aces to people knows that any kind of advice you give to someone has to be geared to that person. It can't be, you know, broad advice to everyone. It involves getting to know someone and knowing that person's chunuf and nefesh, and that basis giving them advice. In fact, I must admit, always suspicious of people who give advice to someone that they barely know. Unless they have Ruach HaKodesh, they can't argue with Ruach HaKodesh. But otherwise, if you don't know the person, you know, pretty well, so your advice is too general to be to be meaningful to the person and the person's own needs. One more question, then we'll again move on. If we finish early, we can always come back. Yeah.
In general, how strong an argument are is financial constraints upon one's family is making a social decision? You know, a lot of times there's an argument that, let's say, you might expect your parents to support you or your in-laws to support you, but if you're going to do something, if you're going to learn your college, if you're going to live in Israel, and you're not going to have that type of financial situation, so how do you expect to support your kids and your daughters or sons and so on? How strong is an argument is that?
Well, everybody doesn't learn so they can support the next generation. The next generation won't be learning either, but that's what the generation after that. So, I mean, there's a certain point where that gets everybody out of the learning process. I must tell you, personally, and what I've communicate to my own children is I may even put it dramatically, the shekin or the wonderful salaries one makes in teaching in YU. But if a person who plans on going to chinuch is a person who mamash belongs to chinuch, I mean, he has the right kind of abilities, and if he'll be successful, so he won't starve, and he'll find his way, right? And a person who goes to Israel and has a commitment and he has capabilities will also find his way. So if I can go to the other, I must tell you that if a fellow told me that he really has a deep commitment to be a doctor, and he means it, you know, earnestly, and the same commitment to go to Israel, and it's not practical, I would tell him to do both anyway. And he'll find his way. If his commitments are really there, it's not as if there are, you know, that there's, you know, you get off the plane, it's if you're a doctor, they're putting you back on the next plane. No, it hasn't reached that level. It's hard. It's hard.
The first commitment is
people like you making the money. So,
you still say
Tayyat
HaKodri?
I mean, you know, I'm always a little bit wary of people who are cheshbon for the future, right? 20 years in the future, 25 years in the future. Not everybody who goes into business becomes millionaires. The employment figure that went up to 6.8% is not filled up only with mechanchim and abonim. The unemployment lines are filled with people who were in Wall Street 2 years ago. A person has an obligation to provide for his family. And he can't be a tzaddik on their cheshbon, right? My father-in-law likes to say in the story about his famous stories about various tannaim who lived on almost nothing. He says that find their tzaddik, what happened to their children, where their children live for. And I think it's a very good point there. Can't be a tzaddik on someone else's cheshbon. I'm so firm that my children don't have to have clothing to wear. That's not right. I have an obligation. One of the chiyuvim is to provide for their needs. However, I think in most normal situations, the person is not misplaced. Right? He'll make a go of it, and he'll live on a minimum. I'm not talking about people going on welfare and food stamps. I mean, they'll live. They won't live like this, you know. No, that's a shrekless, you know. Okay, let's move on to back. This is, the next question is slightly related to the previous ones, and because the parents come into this one again from a different angle. Honoring parents and Sakalach.
You may be familiar with the dispute that's quoted in the Torah in Yerideya whether there's a mitzvah of Kivud Aviyim when the parents are Rishoyim. Yeah, they're not necessarily Rishoyim. It could be they're doing an Aveir B'Shoygim. It could be they're doing the right thing also. It could be doing the right thing. But let's say the worst situation. So the Rambam's opinion is that Kivud Aviyim applies even if the parents are Rishoyim. And the Torah has a kash against the Rambam. And the kash against the Rambam, the Mona is El Neshem. Also, probably. Kash against the Rambam, Achrayim give terutzim on the kashes. So it's not that the Rambam is wrong, it's a shaila. The machlekes, the Rambam and the Tur. As a machlekes, it's a speker the rice of the chumah. So the proper thing is that one should observe kibud aviyim even if the parents are not, even if the parents are rishon. Unless my father is a gangster and wants to be mechavidim to help him wash the car that he's going to do the getaway when he robs the bank or something like that, that's a different thing. But my father's a place. He had a boy in the Kollel. His father, I think, was one of the biggest Reform rabbis in America, and he was being honored by his congregation for serving there for 36 years or whatever it was. So the father wanted his son to come to the party. So the son felt packing to be mechaber the father for being a Reform rabbi for so many years. That's a different thing. But it's not the normal kibud aviyim. The proper thing is that we should be machmes. The machlekes and the din deraisa. So sacred deraisa l'chum. You have to be mechaber at one's turn. Kibud aviyim is one of the most neglected mitzvahs. The Gemara says that was pretty neglected, that he, Abaye was a Yosem, he didn't have a father, didn't have a mother, and he said how fortunate he is that he never violated the din of Kibbutz Aviyim, but he never fulfilled it either. He didn't have any parents to fulfill it or to violate it. It's a very difficult mitzvah, but it's one of the crucial mitzvahs, because the whole setup of the Jewish people is based on the family framework. So it's a mitzvah that we should try not to be mezalzel in. Usually Bali Tshuva or similar people like to be Bali Tshuva, even religious, but the religious people come from yeshivas, then become B'nai Yeshiva and some B'nai Torah. So it's a very common practice that the mezalzel in Kibbutz Aviyim, especially in certain yeshivas where the rabbein break them off from the parents. They try to tell them, don't listen to anything your parents say. Your parents are balabatim, what does balabatim know? So that's really a terrible, terrible thing, because it leads to a tremendous zilzal in Kibbutz Aviyim. The kids, the Gemara says on this issue, the Gemara says if a child, Shulchanot quotes from the Gemara from the Rambam, that if the child sees that the parents are in violation of what they're doing out there, you have to try to tell him in a very soft way, don't you know that this is questionable? So if that's not enough, you have to try to tell him a little more than that. Don't you know that you're not allowed to do that? I understand that you're shyless, someone said you're not allowed to do it. You have to try to say it in a nice way. If you see that they're not going to listen, so that's it. You're not going to get anywhere, so you don't. Look, you'll get married. You'll. When I used to come home from the yeshiva, I used to tell my mother, Ma, my father's a rabbi. I used to tell my mother, Ma, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong. So my mother used to say, what's a new religion today? And what was it? Exactly like it says here. And she didn't say it in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. She used to say, what's for the last 40 years we always did it like this? What's a new religion today? She used to always scream at me, telling me, well, you'll get married, you'll do it in your home, your way. I'm married to your father, so I do it my way, I do it your father's way. You have to take care not to be mezalzel, I'm going to keep it out of here. Halacha l'maisa, let's say, when you get down to this particular shaila, there is a din in the Gemara that if someone is in violation of some of the laws of Shehi or Hachazara, they have permitted to eat the food. So that could pose a particular shaila in this case. But then there are rules and regulations, and Mr. Burri, he quotes in the name of the Prima Godin, and whenever there's a machlokes haposkim about something, even though we pass from halacha l'chumra that something is aser, but as long as there's one shita l'hakel, so you can't say that there's a knas that you're not allowed to eat the food together. So in a lot of the situations on Shabbos there will be a machlokes haposkim, even though the Mishnah Berurah says that it's aser. A lot of times the Mishnah Berurah's opinion is not accepted. A lot of times even the Mishnah Berurah's opinion is accepted, but there are other shitas faker. The Mishnah Berurah himself will say that the yevet can't say that there's a penalty, that there's a knas that you're not allowed to eat it, because I'll be told that it is muslim. Take for example, I think that's probably what this question means. If you take out cooked chicken from the refrigerator, you put it on top of the blech, so the Mishnah Berurah says that you're not allowed to do it. It's assumed from the Mishnah Berurah that you're not allowed to do that, but the Sfaradim pass from the Rebbe, they hold that whenever you have a blech. That's not called Agabi Hoch. There are some Ashkenazim who also were of that sort. Generally, it's assumed that it's not so, that that's prohibited. If you take out food from the refrigerator, even dry food, you put it on top of the blech, we assume most of the Ashkenazim assume that that's called Agabi Hoch. Relationship.